Sokala Duma Radio.
Hello and welcome to Sokala Duma Radio. I am your host, Nkululeko Nkeu, and this is The Big Interview. Well, in this episode is part one of the conversation between myself and former FIFA and NPSL referee Dr. Errol Sweeney. In this episode, we'll talk corruption in football, whether it is possible to fix matches, whether it was possible to fix matches then and now. We'll also talk sport fixing in cricket and so on, and referees being intimidated in football matches. Hopefully you will enjoy the conversation.
Sokala Duma Radio.
Well, 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 we have a special guest in our studios live. It's Dr. Errol Sweeney, a man whose works I've consumed over the years, reading about him, reading about incidents that he's refereed in the PSL and internationally. Dr. Sweeney, thank you very much for joining us on Sokala Duma Radio. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you, and it's good to be here.
Yeah, thank you very much for joining us. I was thinking about where to start when I knew that you were going to come in here. And I think having read your works, one thing that for me stood out was one incident with an Irish referee, who referees in amateur football. Daniel Sweeney was attacked in a car park close to the stadium after officiating in a game. Can you talk to us about that incident a bit, the context of it, and what do you make of the whole scenario?
Yeah, well, this Daniel Sweeney, no relation, of course, to me, was attacked in a car park after a game because he had trouble with a player during the game. And after the game, he was attacked and beaten, and he ended up with a broken nose, very badly bruised face, and I think one of his eye sockets was also cracked.
I remember seeing the pictures. It was
bad. Yeah, indeed. Really horrific. And the surprising thing about that is that he came out later in the press and said that he forgave his attackers, stating that he is a man of faith and that he held no animosity towards the people involved in the attack. Well, he's a much, his faith is obviously much stronger than mine, because I would also be a man of faith, but I don't think I could forgive my attackers for if they did something like that to me. It was really horrific. It is, thankfully, quite a rare occasion or occurrence in Ireland, especially. And one of the attackers apparently was already on bail for a similar type incident, not in a football match, and he was out on bail for a similar type of assault. So things have moved on since then, and it's come out that the four people involved have been banned from any participation in any capacity in soccer for 40 years. 40 years. So they won't be allowed to play, they won't be allowed to be a member of a club, they won't be allowed to be on a committee or anything to do with football for 40 years. And now that is, that's on the one instance that they still can be charged for assault. And I hope they are, and I hope they get the full rigors of the law.
Are you satisfied with the outcome then? The 40-year ban, are you satisfied?
Well, no, I'm not. I think it should be banned for life. Because you cannot have that. I mean, this referee was operating on his own. There's a terrible shortage of referees in Ireland, as there are many countries.
All over the world, actually.
Yeah, and some referees have to referee on their own, without assistance, without linesmen. So it's very difficult to pick up everything, and especially the offside. And the offside seems to be the most contentious of all laws of the game. Of the 17 laws of the game, the offside seems to be the most contentious. And he was refereeing on his own. It was an amateur game. There would be no protection, but then you wouldn't expect protection to be needed at those kind of games, because it is a rare occurrence, thankfully.
It seems to be that the people that we need the most to initiate a football match are at times the least respected people. Those are the match officials, you know. Can you take us perhaps down the line and in your observation in Ireland, all over the world, in South Africa, in terms of referee treatment from administrators, from players, what kind of experiences have you had, and what kind of measures that can be put in place by the powers that be to protect the referees better?
The powers that be can be sometimes found wanting when it comes to the security of referees. I was also attacked in Ireland way back once when guys didn't agree with the decisions I was giving, and in fact followed me out to my car. And my wife was in the car at the time, and she was heavily pregnant, and they rocked my car as I was trying to drive off. But I was in a very good league, and it just depends on the different leagues and what kind of administrators there are there, and whether they will tolerate this kind of thing. The league that I was in, it was an amateur league before I got promoted to the Premier League, were very, very good. And the secretary of that league was excellent. And I mean, he always and always and always supported the referees. And look, you won't get every decision right. You have to make your decision based on what you see at the time. And your gut feeling is nearly always right, but you will get it wrong. And offside is always very contentious, as I mentioned earlier, and that can happen. But, you know, because if you don't have assistance, even with assistance, and now even with VAR and the technology that's available, sometimes it's still difficult to decide if a player is offside or not. So what chance have you got if you're on your own as a referee? Some of the footballing authorities in the various leagues can be found wanting, but certainly this league that I was in, they were excellent. It was called the Amateur Football League, and they were absolutely brilliant. They supported the referees 100%.
And now that you mentioned VAR, it's one of the things that I wanted to speak to you about. You officiated in a period where at some point in your life you would have thought technology is not going to be implemented in football. The manner in which the officials, the FIFA officials, the UEFA, the CAF officials were talking about football, they never really thought about technology other than the cameras picking up the match and broadcasting it live. What do you feel now, 30 years later, that there is technology integrated to football? And do you think that perhaps it's helping us, or is it hindering us?
Look, I don't understand. Getting on, speaking about the VAR, I don't know why it's taken so long to implement. I mean, the technology is there and has been there for a long time.
Yeah.
We're getting replays on SuperSport and on Sky overseas from different angles, various different angles. We're getting replays. The technology is there. Why couldn't they have a referee in the studio or in the outside broadcast truck to make a decision there? Why does it have to be an official thing from FIFA? And I think there's a certain amount of ego attached here to FIFA, that they will decide that they will bring in this and they will do this and they will do that. The technology is already there.
Yeah.
Why don't they use it? The Premier League in England are bringing in VAR next year.
Yeah.
Why are they waiting so long? It's already been used in Germany, in Portugal, in Italy.
In Spain as well.
Why does the English FA wait so long? And, you know, there has been comments that it's too expensive to bring it in here to the PSL. But SuperSport are doing replays all the time. Why can't you stick a referee in the studio and let him decide and then relay it to the match official? Yes, yeah. It's a goal or not a goal. Similar to what they do with rugby.
Yeah.
It's fine-tuned there now. The problems they're saying with football is that it takes too long to make a decision and it slows the game down and blah, 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 all this nonsense. But at the end of the day, is it not important that justice is not only done, but seen to be done? And if it's a goal or a red card or whatever, is it not important for that extra few seconds that justice is seen to be done? And that will kill a lot of the discontent, particularly among supporters. You've seen in the past where spectators have rioted and people have been killed over decisions that were made on the field of play. The technology is now there. They seem to have accepted the goal line technology that particularly the English Premier League referees have on their wrist, and they can make a decision literally in seconds.
Yeah.
Why can we not do it with the so-called VAR? It's an extra set of officials when one man up there can make all those decisions.
So if you were to make any adjustments, it would be that you just need one person to make
Yes, that and decision. I think just like they do in cricket and just like they do in rugby,
yes.
It's a TMO, put them up there. I don't know how many referees now they have in the studio or
like
wherever it is.
Four or five extra officials.
So now you have, instead of three officials or one in the case of Mr. Sweeney, who was attacked in Ireland, now you have three officials. Now you have four officials. Now suddenly you have six officials in UEFA games. And now you're going to have an extra three or four guys in the studio. So you're going to have 10 guys deciding on whether a goal is scored or not, or offside or penalty or whatever. I mean, it's just nonsense.
Yeah. I was speaking to Ace Ngobo, he's a former PSL referee, about this, and he had an interesting take on it. Of course, you can't really stop change. We're going to have video assistant referee, but one of the pushbacks that he mentioned was that it's going to turn the sport into an elitist sport because you are implementing something that is only implementable at the higher level. So someone who has been developed to play football without the technology is going to be shell-shocked when they only interact with the technology at the higher level, whether it's the official or the players. How would you respond to those kind of pushbacks? Not to him directly, but those kind of voices that some countries will not have VAR, Tanzania will not have VAR because of costs, Comoros will not have it because of costs, but when they qualify for the World Cup and all of a sudden now they have to adjust the manner in which they play their game because suddenly at that level, at World Cup level, there are stoppages. How would you then push back on that?
No, I agree with Ace. I know Ace very, very well. Mm. Look, the same argument has been put forward. You can have this VAR at senior level, at international level, but you won't have it at lower level in amateur league in here in South Africa, in the NFD, in the Motsepe League. You won't have it there because it costs too much. There's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. And I do agree that technology, you can't stop the march of technology. And I have no problem with change, so long as change is for the better, not to be more complicated. Change is fine, but some people change for the sake of change.
For the sake of changing, yeah.
Like I said earlier, the technology is already there. We're watching games on television all the time where we're getting camera angles from perhaps 10 different angles. Mm. So why do they now need a VAR to decide when the technology is there? What is this whole thing about VAR? Is it somebody who's on an ego trip because they developed it and they now want it implemented? And also, why is it taking so long in the UK, in England, to introduce it when it's already been used in other countries? Mm. Again, is it somebody on an ego trip who says, well, it'll only be implemented when I say it'll be implemented? Is that for the good of the game?
Mm.
I don't think so.
Absolutely. And another aspect of officiating, of course, that has always been contentious is the fact that the referees, it's not necessarily contentious, it's something that people have advocated for, that the referees are semi-professional, they need to be professionalized. As a man of experience like yourself, what sets of challenges do you foresee when refereeing structures are professionalized? For example, if a referee, so South Africa has now Outsurance, the mesh officials are now sponsored by Outsurance, you then have a club, say for example, any club, that would be sponsored by Outsurance. Do you foresee any sort of clash in that? Do you foresee any other problems with that? That you would have one club being sponsored by Outsurance, whilst the referees as a body is now being sponsored by Outsurance? What kind of problems would arise from refereeing being professionalized and sponsored?
I don't have a problem with referees being sponsored and professionalized. I think it's long, long, long overdue. The only problem I would have is that there would be any form of interference or influence by anybody in the whole setup of refereeing. Mm. I delivered a paper to a conference a couple of years ago about an independent refereeing body with no interference from clubs, from managers, from anybody else, even sponsors. I don't think they should be. The only sponsoring, and I'm sort of torn between the two here. Without sponsors, sponsorship is the lifeblood of any organization or club or, you know, and it's needed and money is required. The problem I would have is that if they pour money into the refereeing, what kind of return do they want for their money?
Mm.
Is there any influence there? I'm not sure there would be any, as you mentioned earlier, about if the same sponsor sponsors a team and then sponsors the referees. I don't think that's a healthy idea.
Mm.
But I do agree that the refereeing needs money to develop. They'll tell you all the time that no referee, no game, but yet the poorest paid of the participants, which is not a good idea either. But they should be, and I've long advocated this, they should be like the judiciary in any democratic country.
Mm.
Referees should be independent, autonomous, no influence from any club or any clubs or managers or anything like that. We've had that in the past where various English Premier League managers were criticizing referees, and the one famous manager who used to point to his watch and say, oh, there's extra time or time is up and so on. And, you know, there shouldn't be any, referees should be allowed to go out and referee their game without any sort of, not threat, but any concern that a club, because they poured money into the refereeing to pay their salaries of the referees, that they should feel in any way influenced by the fact that their money's coming. The money at the moment for the Premier League comes from the Premier League, the Football Association, the FA, and the Championship. So there's money taken from those three organizations, and that goes to pay the referees' fees and salaries. I'm not sure that's a good idea, because then the clubs can come along and say, oh, well, I'm paying your wages and you're giving me this performance and you did that and you shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
That is wrong. The money should come from an independent pot. Yes, a sponsor. What kind of money return can they get? Well, in England, they have they can wear sort of the sponsor's logo on their shoulder.
Yeah.
In Scotland, it's rather ironic. They get their money from Specsavers. You know, they always say referees are blind. So, but that's okay. Specsavers don't sponsor anybody else.
Any other club.
And they don't sponsor a club, exactly. So I think it would be better that they had a sponsor that didn't have any other connections with other clubs.
Mm. According to your experience, how rife do you think match fixing is? I was watching an Al Jazeera documentary on cricket, and cricket has a history with spot fixing. So you don't really fix or you don't manipulate the outcome of the game, but you manipulate instances in a game. You bowl a no ball on the 12th over. You in the last over of 8 days playing a test match, you don't concede, you don't score more than 2 runs. For example, they call it a manda, and someone makes a lot of money out of that. How rife do you think match fixing is in football? Do you believe what you see with your eyes, that that is the reality, or it's being cooked?
It's very difficult to know. There was a famous goalkeeper who played for Zimbabwe some years ago and played for Liverpool.
I read about him recently.
Yeah, and they said he was fixing matches. I mean, how do you know if a goalkeeper, look what Karius did for Liverpool in the Champions League final, where he was the cause of 2 of the goals. Were they deliberate? Was it deliberate? You know, how do you know? Players are diving all the time. Look at Raheem Sterling the other day in the Champions League. Deliberately dived, wasn't touched. I'm not sure about actual corruption, but deception and dishonesty, I think, is rife in the game today.
Mm.
And what's even worse, in my opinion, is that the referees are allowing it to happen. I mean, I can see a player diving. I know if he's been touched. I see a player shielding the ball. A guy comes up behind to try and get the ball, an opponent, and he touches him, and suddenly the guy goes falling forward. Now, if I touch you in the street with such force, would you fall out in front of a car? I don't think so. I don't think even your grandmother would. And that's the kind of deception, deceit. Is it corruption? Maybe corruption is too strong a word, but it's certainly very, very dishonest.
That was part one of our conversation with Dr. Errol Sweeney. I certainly enjoyed it. We'll stop it for now. You'll hear part two next week. For now, it is goodbye.
Sokala Duma Radio. Sokala Duma Radio.